far-right state legislature who is really obsessive and hell-bent on having some sort of confrontational defiance of federal authority. And many people here in Tucson are really trying to come to grips of how there can be more public events to have greater access to politicians, and that really has been jeopardized with this sort of shooting, that ultimately in the future we're going to be having less access to our elected officials.
3 seconds.
And more influence, even more influence, with the gun lobby and other lobbyists.
Jeff Biggers and Chip Roulette, I want to thank you all for being with us. We'll continue this discussion tomorrow. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us. Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
And you're listening to WUSB, where the time is 5 minutes after 6. Really, Amy? 5 minutes after 6 o'clock. All right. Well, the show starts at 6 o'clock for future reference, and the show is called Off the Wall. Good evening, everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, along with Kyle.
Hi.
And, you know, your highs are getting shorter and shorter. You know that?
Hello.
Soon we won't be able to hear you at all. Yeah, this program was not supposed to happen. We actually were supposed to be on tape. Well, actually, we don't use tape anymore. We were pre-recorded this week. In fact, this week was supposed to be the pillow fighting episode. I'm not even going to say what.
Awesome.
I'm not going to even talk about what that means until it airs.
Yeah, people got to wait to hear that. That's going to be really good.
But we're going to have to wait. We're going to have to wait because I was supposed to air.
We're alive and well.
We came back. We've been overseas since December, early mid December, and we got back yesterday and we're sort of sitting around. And I said, Kyle, hey, you want to do some live radio instead of just moping around? And yeah.
Well, and we could have listened to this show that we had ready to go, but
and
why?
That was the other motivating factor. We didn't want to listen to ourselves.
Well said, but no. Why not just go in and do some live radio? There's a lot of things to be said, and I was just mentioning it's a rare commodity these days. Not a lot of live radio going on, and I think we could contribute and share our voices and maybe hear from people on the phone. They can be on the radio, too.
That's right. And like you said, live radio is a rare commodity, which is why it's important to do something like that, especially on this very special day, the 4th of July, 1993, when we have a whole lot of people that, okay, fine, it's not then.
But, isn't that the 5th?
I've heard people say things like that, you know, live radio, and then it turns out they're actually pre-recorded or not anywhere near where they say they are. No, it's actually a very special day. January 11th, 2011, 1-1-1-1-1-1. Or if you're in Europe, 1-1-1-1-1.
1-1. As long as you're not 1-1-1-1.
No. But how do you have three ones in a row? It's not the 111th day of January.
Buffalo.
Don't get started with the buffaloes.
Okay. It's 1-1-1.
In America, yes. 1-1-1-1-1.
1-11-11.
If you're not Y2K compliant. If you are Y2K compliant, then you can't do it. It's no fun. It's 1-11-2011. And there, you know, you don't have ones there. And apparently, at 11:11 in the morning, and if you really want to go crazy, at 11 seconds and probably fractions thereof, all kinds of people jumped up from their computers and said something. But I was up and I missed it. I didn't even think about it until I read something.
But there's still 11:11 p.m. Right? Unless you're on military.
Yeah,
time.
But you know, that's really 23:11.
Yeah,
11:11 p.m. is really 23 hours, but there will be November the 1st for the European side of it. It's 1-11-11, and for us it's 11-1-11. So
it's going to be flipped.
You have that to look forward to, and I can't tell you how many times people have said, "You know, it's the only time in history these numbers are ever going to line up." And there must be about 25 different times I can remember recently where something like that has occurred. And it seems to be one almost every year.
Well, if anybody's ever counted sequentially to a really high number, there's all kinds of wonderful patterns in chronological numbering. So it's not that big of a thrill. I mean, all kinds of combinations come up every now and then.
That's right. Actually, can I ask you to press the play button on the cassette deck, which I forgot to do up there?
All right, one second.
Yeah, thank you. I'm sorry for the unprofessionality of the program there, but... Yeah, that's our archive. Well, one of our archives. We have several backup systems. But yeah, it's the same thing with these numbers lining up as lunar eclipses. This is the only lunar eclipse this century on this particular side of the city that you'll be able to see. And they always make it seem like if you miss it, that's it. That's it for this lifetime. That's it for this millennia. And then the next year, there's another one. Or a better one. Or one with a different set of circumstances that make that one the special one. So, if you miss something, don't worry. Something else will happen.
Absolutely.
I think that's what we have to sort of live
with. You know, every day is an important day.
It is.
A special day. So, regardless of the numerology involved.
Tomorrow will be the 12th celebrate. Of January. I don't know what that's good for, but true. I'm sure somebody will come up with something. I know what it's good for. It's good for the date of the big blizzard hitting us here in New York, Long Island.
That's right.
We missed the big blizzard over Christmas that took place because we were overseas dealing with snow over there.
Yeah, there was adequate snowfall and blizzard-like conditions there as well.
Everywhere we went. We started off in Tromsø, Norway.
Yes.
Went down to Stockholm, Sweden. Mm-hmm. Then over to Copenhagen, Denmark. And then into Berlin, Germany. And every single one of those places was coated with snow.
That's right. And Germany dried up a little bit and turned a little slushy. And it was wet towards the end there. And then we made our way even further south.
We made our way to Zurich, Switzerland, where there wasn't very much snow on the ground. And to Paris, France, where there was no snow on the ground.
Yeah, Zurich was very dry. Mm-hmm. We did make a short trip to another country there that was dry but colder. And then absolutely,
it was colder. That's right.
In France, it was very dry and even really sunny. Well,
yeah, France. Yeah, right. But the other country there was it was colder, but again, a little bit of snow on the ground, not a whole lot.
Yeah, I think it was just an altitude thing.
Strange place that was.
Yeah, it was a really. I really encourage people to go to that country.
I've had any second thoughts about it actually, because I've encouraged a lot of people to go there, and some of them haven't been heard from. Yeah, since they went. Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know if I can really recommend people go to that country. But Switzerland, Germany, France, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, all great places, really.
Yeah, I had a really wonderful time. I like all those places for many different reasons. We'll have to get into that sooner or later.
But getting back to the weather, apparently we were hit with a big blizzard over Christmas, which we missed. And then there was another storm after that. People were afraid it was going to be another blizzard. It didn't turn out to be very much. Tonight, though, another storm that they say is going to bring up to 16, 17 inches to us is on its way.
And here we are right on time.
Yeah, we're here in the studio.
I'm glad we came in. I mean, it's right on time. We're right at the calm before the storm, you know?
Oh, it's not a calm before the storm if you go to a supermarket. Try that. In fact, I want to do that after the show. Okay. I want to go to a supermarket and just run down the aisle screaming. I like to do that. And say, I need milk! I need gallons and gallons of it!
There is all kinds of talk about
meat! We have to have meat! And Rice Krispies and all that.
Charcoal! We got to keep warm!
You know, people, at most, you're going to be in the house for a day and a half before somebody plows you out and you'll be able to walk down the street to 7-Eleven or something. The way people react, you know, with their souped up SUVs, they're the first ones that get stuck in the snow, too.
Yes.
You notice that?
Yes.
My 1993 Tercel is a workhorse. I plow through snowbanks with that thing, and I always get where I'm going.
Yeah.
And even the smart car doesn't do too badly. But these four-wheel drive vehicles, I don't know. I just think they give people too much confidence. And
oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah, leads to
they've
trouble.
They've got a really high center of gravity, and they're overpowered, you know, again, like they have all the features that make you think, like four-wheel drive, make you think you can do anything you want, and you know, traction control and all this stuff, and people get all overconfident and start going around.
Hey, watch me flip a wheelie, and before you know it, they're rolling down a hill somewhere.
Yeah, and you know, the tried and true method in a small four-cylinder, small compact car, you know, slow and steady, and keeping your speed consistent, using low gears sometimes to avoid spinning,
having that control to be able to shift yourself.
Yeah, manual transmission.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Well, we'll see how amazing it is tomorrow when we have to drive to New York City to do the other radio show. That's going to be fun. That's going to be so much fun.
The wave of the future. That and landlines are all coming back.
Yeah, landlines are coming back, I hear.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's always heartening to know that more people are using landlines than...
Yeah, well, we're going to be backing U.S. currency against copper.
Are we now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, people are demanding that the American currency be backed by copper.
Mm-hmm.
So it's logical that we...
copper lines.
Right.
Lines are actually made out of copper.
Right. So what people are doing is they're taking up investments, getting their old handsets out, and getting their landlines working again. It's amazing. It's really good to see in this country.
It is good to see. I hope it's true. is there any element of truth whatsoever in this?
Well, yeah.
Okay, good, good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's it sounds better. It's better for you, I think.
Yeah.
Not having a radio transmitting next to your ear constantly, like everybody seems to these days.
And it works when the power's out.
It does. It really does.
In the middle of a storm.
So I guess we're going to find out. And the storm, it's going to be great just watching the snow pile up overnight and digging out tomorrow and figuring everything out. That's what winter should be. And I'm glad that people here finally recognize that and have brought snow back.
Yes. I'm thrilled. I can't wait. And we're right on time. But we have lots and lots of things to talk about tonight.
We do. We want to take some phone calls.
Absolutely.
Because we haven't done that in a while. The last four shows were all pre-recorded. We had the last of the trip you and I took to the former Yugoslavia, Balkan Republics.
Yes, I want to hear what people thought about that, if they enjoyed the recordings we made and had any insight about some of the experiences we had in the former Yugoslavian republics, in the Western Balkans, as it were.
Yeah.
Because there were so many adventures. We had an opportunity to do sort of a recap for somebody who is recording their own podcast.
For Bicycle Mark, yeah, for his podcast.
Yeah, it was
a one-hour recap where we just basically were talking about very quickly about the things that we went through, and we filled an hour just like that.
It was pretty much talking about connections and how we got from one country to the other. We got to add, pepper it with anecdotes and experiences we had, but gosh, just talking about how many countries we went through and what it took to get across and what mode of transportation, even that consumed about an hour, and he was really floored at all the connections we made there. So
yeah,
I really want to hear what people think, if they can call in.
And last week we had the first in a series of Canadian shows that we did over the fall, where I believe we were on Telephone Road.
Yes.
Yeah, and I remember Telephone Row. That was a big deal.
Right. That was actually timed to be played in coordination with this Copperback Dollar Bill campaign.
Okay. All right.
By the
Telephone
Treasury.
Road.
Yeah.
Makes
so
perfect sense.
So people remember, you know, what is backing the American dollar? Mm-hmm. It's copper. So
absolutely, absolutely. Well, we got back yesterday. We flew in. Actually, it's kind of weird. We flew from Paris to Iceland because that's where the airplane was from, apparently, and then from Iceland to New York. And wouldn't you know it? I'm not kidding, folks. This is a total chance occurrence. At the airport in Iceland, we run into WikiLeaks people. It just happened to be there at that moment in time, people we know, and had a nice conversation with them. And I'm sure all these intelligence agencies were watching us and saying, wow, they planned that good, didn't they? But really, it was all by chance. I don't know how many times you meet somebody in an airport that just happens to be there at that particular moment and is probably the only person in the country that you know. it must happen more than I think.
I traveled on this very route one time from Seattle, and I was sitting behind one of my best friends from grade school, kindergarten.
There you go.
Met him in Seattle, and then we, you know, stopped over. He was transferring on somewhere else in Reykjavik. But, you know, we went through the whole baggage check and everything, you know, checking into the EU in Reykjavik. And it was just really, really cool. I was sitting right behind him on the airplane. So there's all kinds of synchronization that goes on in the world that perhaps governments don't have their hand in. So they'd have to sort of sit back and watch. And boy, that was really cool, though, to see people, you know, and just share and talk for a little bit and hear about their experiences traveling. And they've even spent a little time there. We've never really been out of the airport either of the times that we've been to Iceland, but it sounds like a really cool place. Sounds like they're no stranger to snowfall either.
Well, I don't think they get that much.
Yeah, yeah.
Greenland gets more, but it certainly looks like an interesting place. I believe the whole country is above the tree line. Did you see any trees in Iceland? I don't think they have trees.
No, I didn't.
They don't know what a tree is. They know what snow is. They have all kinds of words for that, but not for trees. Yeah, interesting.
I don't know. Well, we can look that up.
Yeah, someone correct me if I'm wrong, but if there are trees in Iceland, and not the kind that are inside greenhouses or anything like that, I mean the kind that are outside, you know, outside on the land.
Yeah, there's certainly none around the airport.
It looked like, you know, some other planet when we were landing, and that's why I think it looks so big, because it's like a vast prairie.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and so then, of course, we came back to this country. You know, I don't want to get into details, because I'll just be going on for a long, long time about what happened to me getting back into this country. But yeah, it happened again. Happened again, folks, where I was taken into custody and had all my stuff gone through. And this time it was a little bit different. I'm going to get more into detail on that on the show tomorrow night. But I got
to say, this was terrifying, though.
Yeah, it was.
As your traveling companion, colleague, partner, whatever you want to say, it was really terrifying. And I was going through my passport looking for the stamp, kind of lingering, waiting to see where you were in line, just to make sure that you got through, because we didn't really talk about if anything happened or we're not planning for these kinds of things. It's our own country. We should be able to come back and get right through customs. And I had no problem and was thankful for that, but concerned. And I looked back and I sort of lingered, flipped through, looking for the stamp that they had placed in my passport, kind of waiting out of the corner of my eye to see if you made it through all right, and then link up with you, obviously, before we turn in our immigration forms and whatever and actually get out into the public area, the international greeting area. And I saw you wander off with some short, pasty white, bald-headed customs guy dragging you off into some room.
Being led away. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, to say I was surprised by it, I wasn't surprised by it, but it still made me really nervous, you know, even though I kind of knew it was going
to
happen.
This has to stop happening, though, E. And we really, and I suggested this after you were let go.
Mm-hmm.
We need to get support. I know there's support out there, and I really would like to have some ideas and action. Maybe a couple people that are very familiar with the FOIA process to find out why this keeps happening to you and get some information on how you can formally correct whatever is in their system that is that's causing these slowdowns.
I want to see what's in their system, and I think I have that right to
first
do that.
First and foremost, you should be able to see it. And secondly, you know, as someone who's in the country, thriving as an American citizen right now, you're not traveling, you're not abroad, you should be able to correct this mm-hmm. so that when you leave for, you know, you can't even go on a Christmas vacation.
I can't go anywhere. Every time I leave the damn country, I'm subjected to this coming back in. And what do they think I'm trying to bring into the country? Yeah. What do you think I'm trying to do? I live here, for God's sake.
And absolutely.
All the places we've been to so many places,
right.
Nothing like this has ever happened.
It never has been this as bad as it is at American borders.
People don't even ask any questions. They don't ask, look at your passport, see that you're the same person, stamp it, you move on. You know?
Well, and that actually was the case for me this time coming back in. And I think you should be granted that same right. Unless they have some proof of something, they need to stop harassing you. Because this is basically harassment. And I don't feel like, unless they have something concrete, where's the equality?
Mm-hmm.
Because I had no problem. She didn't even look at me.
Mm-hmm.
She slid it in the barcode reader, stamp, and said go. She didn't even ask me the questions that normally are asked.
Right.
I was asked questions when I had to leave that area and hand in my
get
forms.
This. I was asked the question, have you ever been questioned before? And I said, well, actually, there were a couple of times when I was randomly detained or randomly inspected or something like that. And at that point, he decided to randomly inspect me again, I guess, and sent me off into this room called CBP, Customs and Border Patrol Eligibility. This is the room they send people who are trying to get into the country that aren't citizens. It's like a hearing room. There are maybe about 20 seats there, not one of which was occupied because nobody was in there except for me and three people in police uniforms behind a tall desk, sort of like a judge. And not a word was spoken. I would not sit down. I remained standing. That was like the one thing that I did to kind of counter what it was they were doing to me. I looked at the pictures on the wall. They had pictures of New York and various other American landmarks, I guess.
God, I was terrified.
I was terrified. I was shaking the whole time. And I'm kind of surprised at myself. I should be used to it by now. But, you know, they always get you. And there was a sign there on the wall saying detention cells are locked at a particular time, or the exact time was. And you know, the more I thought about it, the more I realized it's just a message being sent to watch who it is you talk to, what it is you do, what it is you say. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to come in tonight, because, damn it, I do not want to be pushed around like that by anybody. And
I
felt.
There's some serious lines need to be drawn, and you know, enough is enough. And I think we need to put this down as a project, start making lists of things that we need to do to get something like this fixed in the future. I mean, I was terrified. At this point, I had to move out of the area, hand them my forms. They did ask me a couple questions. What do you do mm-hmm. at the part where, you know, where you actually hand in the immigration
right.
papers? And then I left that area. And I had no idea where you were. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how long it would take.
Right.
I was getting concerned. I was starting to think about, you know, maybe I should start contacting people and making a stink about this, because I know you couldn't use your phone in there.
Right.
And luckily I saw you come out and
they held me in there for between 10 and 20 minutes. I can't even tell. Time sort of does weird things to you. Again, no words spoken. They just basically were typing all kinds of things, reading all sorts of things on the computer. And then eventually gave me my form, asked for it back. Apparently, I forgot to do something, more typing. Then I went out. Then I had to get searched after that. And that was a whole other thing, having all my stuff gone through. Very demoralizing, very bad way to re-enter your home, but something that is not surprising, unfortunately.
So this was the first 15, 20 minutes of being in the U.S. Not so good so far. And we got on a train and made our way home and didn't have enough money for fare.
Well, no, that's not exactly what happened. We were at Jamaica Station, and I bought a ticket. And since we were getting a ride and we had just missed the train out here to the Stony Brook area, decided to take the Ronkonkoma branch.
Right.
And I bought a ticket. It was about 8 o'clock or so for that. And I just assumed that 8 o'clock was not rush hour, but apparently 8 o'clock is rush hour. I did not know this. I really didn't. So I bought an off-peak ticket instead of a peak ticket. There was no way to know which one to buy. The machine doesn't tell you.
Yeah, and there's no signs. There's no reader boards, you know, telling you this. You had to walk over and get a little tissue paper pamphlet to run your fingers across the timetable, you know, get a straight edge out so you could see what lines up. And that's when you found out it was peak.
Yeah, and that's when I said, oh, gosh, using a different word for that. What are we going to do now? Because I bought that with a credit card. I didn't have cash to buy more tickets.
We were so tired at this point. I mean, you had just been through heck.
I had been through heck.
Heck and a half.
And basically, I just planned to just get on the train and have it out with whoever it is that was going to challenge us. That's the kind of mood I was in. However, we were kind of wiped. There were all kinds of other things going on.
And it was just, that point I realized I lost my hat.
You lost your prized hat somewhere, either in France or Iceland, and we're still trying to track that down.
So here we are on the first hour. Big bummer, you know, as far as the country's going.
Big punch in the stomach coming back into this place.
Yeah, exactly. And so the train lumbers up and we get on, and, you know, we're so tired and you know, just kind of like, okay, fine, let's get on, let's get going. What are we going to do? Buy two tickets? Let's just work it out with the conductor. How many tickets are we going to buy?
I saw the conductor coming up the aisle, and she looked like a really nice lady, so my tactics changed. I was wiped out. I didn't have the strength, so I just basically, I just pleaded my case. I said, look, we just came from the airport. I did not know this was a peak train. If you want, we'll get off the train and wait for the next train.
Yeah.
Just tell us what to do. And she said, okay, no problem. All you have to do is show me ID and we'll work it out. She walked away to take the rest of the tickets, and she came back, asked for my ID, which was a passport. And I think that combined with the story of being in the airport, our overall demeanor, really warmed her up. And she just started talking to us. And we had the most incredible conversation. She went back and she got ID that she wanted to show us from her days working at Pan Am, which Pan Am doesn't exist anymore. And wow, what an interesting thing to show somebody.
She said she was dating herself, but she looked great.
She really
did. She was really gorgeous. And I was blown away at the experiences that she had. She started telling us all this stuff about her travels when she was 19, 20.
And she was working for South African Airways. And then she went away again to get something else. And when she came back and brought this to us, what did she have? She had a picture of her sitting with Nelson Mandela. She had actually met him and hung out with him at the airport once, and he had a big smile on his face. It was just the most incredible thing. We just shared all these stories, and I'm like, wow, this is incredible. Somebody that I was thinking I was going to have a confrontation with over a stupid ticket price,
yes,
you wind up having the most incredible conversation with.
Yes.
And it basically turned a bad experience into something really nice and
so
uplifting.
Yeah, we so needed it at this point. And, you know, just the she had an anecdote about having lost his signature and he got it back to her.
Yeah, she had his signature. She had a flood in her house and it got completely destroyed. She was able to somehow contact him again and get a second one. That's incredible.
That
right
made
there
me feel better about losing my hat.
Yeah, maybe you can get your hat somehow sent back to you.
It was just such a warm interaction of sharing and speaking to a fairly worldly in fact American a person living in America who, you know, just made us feel welcome and felt like sharing because of the way we looked. Because we looked, you know, like intrepid travelers just coming back. And so that was actually
a true kindred spirit, I think.
Absolutely. So that was a bright point in our otherwise rough reentry.
And you do have rough points. Whenever you travel or just go through life in general, you have these things that happen that make life really hard. But in the most surprising places, you can find something that just uplifts you.
If you're open to it.
You have to be open to it. You have to be open to that. You have to give it a chance. And I'm just very happy that we were in that position. And things are getting better. And we're acclimating.
And it makes you want to be proactive and mm-hmm. be open to possibilities. And like I was saying with the whole customs thing, you know, doing things about these difficulties and fixing things. You know, I'm big into like fixing things and restoring things and having things work properly. I get a real kick out of that. And so I don't know, it just it was a good way to recover from that stuff, and I don't know, it made me feel like a lot better about it.
Me too. Of course, coming back into the country, there's all this culture shock and adjusting that you have to do. We were in Paris when we heard the news from Arizona about the yet another mass shooting. It's just it gets to the point where you just kind of throw up your hands in despair and wonder if anything is ever going to change here. And after being in so many places where we have conversations with people and see how they live their lives, you really have to wonder what in God's name is wrong with us that we keep falling down these pits and we don't seem to have the common sense to make it any better. We just keep having the same tired arguments and ridiculous points of view that simply make things worse. I'd like to read an editorial that was in today's New York Times because I think this really gets it, but it's incredible how many people still don't get it. And of course, I'm referring to the recent shooting of a congresswoman in Arizona, along with a bunch of other people, six of whom were killed, including a 9-year-old girl, in a supermarket of all places, where the congresswoman was simply meeting some of her constituents. And unfortunately, these days, some of your constituents are angry people with guns. Not really surprised, given the amount of rhetoric you see being passed around. We'll get into that in a moment. And, of course, we'll take some phone calls, 631-632-9872, in just a few minutes. The Glock 19 is a semi-automatic pistol so reliable that it's used by thousands of law enforcement agencies around the world, including the New York Police Department, to protect the police and the public. On Saturday in Tucson, it became an instrument of carnage for two preventable reasons. It had an oversized ammunition clip that was once restricted by federal law and still should be, and it was fired by a disturbed man who should never have been able to purchase it legally. And let me just step out of this for a moment. All these people who talk about how the only problems are when guns get in the hands of people illegally. No, it's not. It's lots of times it's law-abiding citizens. It's people that lose their temper, people that lose their cool, people that lose their minds that cause a lot of this carnage. And it's because they're able to get these things so easily without any real oversight and get so much of it. That is the problem. And it's got nothing to do with taking away people's rights to whatever kind of gun they think they have the right to within reason. It's got to do with having some common sense, which we seem to have completely lost. Continuing with the editorial, the ludicrously thin membrane that now passes for gun control in this country almost certainly made the Tucson tragedy worse. Members of Congress are legitimately concerned about their own safety now, but they should be no less worried about the effect of their inaction on the safety of all Americans. As lawmakers in Washington engaged this week in moments of silence and tributes to Representative Gabrielle Giffords and the other casualties, they should realize that they have the power to reduce the number of these sorts of horrors and their lethality. And again, just to step out for a moment, I was watching the news just before we came over here, and it's incredible. This kind of typifies our country and what we feel is progress and ways of dealing with situations like this. In Arizona, they're working on emergency legislation. For what? Common sense gun laws of any sort, ways to protect people from lunacy? No, of course not. Nothing like that. Their main concern is that there are going to be protesters at the funeral of the 9-year-old girl from that crazy Westboro Baptist Church in Kansas. That I don't know why they're targeting her, but they are. So they're passing emergency legislation to make that illegal. Great. You know, it's not really the biggest problem that we have to face, is it? Disrespecting somebody at a funeral. No, the problem is the lunacy that we call society today and how the rest of the world simply looks upon us as one step short of insane. Continuing with the editorial, have the power, that is, to reduce the number of these sorts of horrors, they will need to stand up to the National Rifle Association and its allies, whose lobbying power continues to grow despite the evidence, the clear evidence, that the groups have made the country a far more dangerous place. Having won a Supreme Court ruling establishing a right to keep a firearm in the home, the gun lobby is striving for new heights of lunacy, waging a campaign to legalize the possession of a gun in schools, bars, parks, offices, churches, and even by teenagers. It reflexively opposes even mild, sensible restrictions. But if there was any reason left in this debate, The latest mass shooting should force a retreat. Is there anyone, even the most diehard gun lobbyist, who wants to argue that a disturbed man should be able to easily and legally buy a Glock to shoot a congresswoman, a judge, a 9-year-old girl? One of the first things Congress can do is take up a bill proposed by our own Representative Carolyn McCarthy, a Democrat of Long Island. And she basically became, I don't know if you know this, Kyle, she became a congresswoman because her husband and son, I believe that both her husband and son, were shot on the Long Island Railroad by a crazed gunman. That piece of legislation would ban the extended ammunition clip used by the Arizona shooter, Jared Loeffner. A Glock 19 usually holds 15 bullets. Mr. Loeffner used an oversized clip allowing him to fire as many as 33 bullets before pausing to reload. It was at that point that he was tackled and restrained. To me, that doesn't seem like nearly enough. For periods of purposes of defense, or for hunting, or for whatever it is you think that you need to have your gun for.
You don't need
to fire 15 times in a row, and I don't think the difference between 15 and 33 is really that great.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that there's everybody's saying, you know, in this article, there's a lot of, you know, the Glock 19, and people are, you know, commenting, and you hear all about this gun, the Glock. That's a brand.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of different.
People know so much about them, too.
Of guns and all kinds of accessories. I mean, it's basically a lot of publicity for the Glock. I mean, how come people aren't, you know, I'm sure there's people in the gun world that are debating, well, you know, he really ought to have used a Kimber. That's a much better gun.
And you're not kidding, because they are doing that. They are having that discussion.
And jacketed hollow points. They would have worked much better. That's the kind of insanity is that people who are gun enthusiasts, they don't even see the fact that this person was unstable and that this is a real sort of affront to humankind.
Well, I've heard
these are handguns. It's not a brand. It's not that you don't sit there and argue over the intricacies of the guns. It's what people are doing with handguns.
I've heard Tea Partiers, right wingers say that, if we had only known if certain people like his parents or his teachers had simply reported him as being mentally disturbed, he never would be able to get a gun. Doesn't work that way. You can't simply tell somebody they're insane or incapable of being a certain applying for something. It's not that easy. You can't just snap your fingers. You can do that in hindsight. You can't do that in the present, because I think we can all think of somebody that we'd say, well, you know, I really would not be comfortable if that guy had a machine gun in his hand. But if you try to restrict that, these same people will be the first ones to say, how dare you keep this person from exercising his rights? So It's you cannot win that particular scenario in any way, because you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. Let me continue with the editorial and finish this. Maybe take some phone calls. I'd like to talk about this.
Yeah.
Between 1994 and 2004, it was illegal to manufacture or import the extended clips as part of the ban on assault weapons. But the ban was never renewed because of the fierce opposition of the NRA. At least 6 states, including California and New York, ban extended clips, which serve absolutely no legitimate purpose outside of military or law enforcement use. You can't argue this fact. There is no, unless a whole squadron of deer are running towards you, there is absolutely no reason, and they're threatening you, to have an extended clip. Or unless you're Rambo, unless you're in some kind of war or something like that, which you're not supposed to be in civilized society, not generally. Continuing here, at a minimum, that ban should be extended nationwide and should prohibit possession, not just manufacture. The gun itself was purchased by Mr. Loeffner at a sporting goods store that followed the bare minimum federal background check, which only flags felons, people found to be a danger to themselves or others, or those under a restraining order. It's very easy to not be on that and still be somebody who's very dangerous.
Yeah, or you could, you know, get a gun in the black market. I mean, mm-hmm. They're so pervasive, and I think the lines blur with authority.
Well, you realize that's the argument they use, though. They say, yeah, you can get it on the black market, so what's the point of having this this registration or having any kind of background check, because you can just get it illegally. But can you think of any other instance where something is apply that to drugs, for instance. Well, you know what? Let's not prosecute somebody for possession of drugs because, well, he's just going to get it anyway, and we'll just make it nice and easy. Those same people are the first ones to crack down on that.
Yeah.
And I think any other law or restriction of any sort would be looked upon a lot more seriously than this. Let me finish this. We'll hopefully go on to some phone calls.
Continue.
Mr. Loeffner was rejected by the military for failing a drug test, had 5 run-ins with the Pima Community College police before being suspended for disruptive activity. Why can't Congress require a background check without loopholes for gun shows or private sales that would detect this sort of history? If the military didn't want someone like Mr. Loeffner to be given a firearm, neither should the public at large. At least 2 members of Congress say they will start to carry weapons to district meetings, the worst possible response. If lawmakers want to enhance their safety and that of their constituents, I should recognize that the true public menace is the well-dressed gun lobbyist hanging out just outside their chamber door. And that is from the New York Times Today editorial. And I really don't think you could say it any better than that. We were in Switzerland. And Switzerland is a country that is often touted by gun lobbyists who say that everybody in Switzerland is given a gun, which is not entirely true. Basically, anybody who's in the military is issued a rifle, I believe. They've had a big problem with suicides and accidents and things like that. Not so much with people mowing down other people, though that has happened as well. But they've had this big problem. And as a result... basically, I'm going to read the facts here. Switzerland has the 4th highest rate of civilian gun ownership after the U.S., Yemen, and Finland. And that's according to the Small Arms Survey. And they recorded an average of 1,428 suicides every year. And 24% of those involved guns. While the Swiss homicide rate is relatively low at 12 per 1 million inhabitants compared with 56 per million in the U.S., the number of killings by family members is high. Domestic violence deaths amount to 5.5 per million versus 7.9 in the U.S., 4.3 in the Netherlands. So basically, what happened is they introduced legislation to deal with this. In 1999, they introduced their first unified gun ownership law, and basically they agreed to tighten the rules as part of an accord with its European neighbors to do away with border controls. These changes, which are about to take effect, will require all gun buyers to have permits and impose penalties on illegal gun ownership for the first time. Basically, they're fighting for the rules that will require military weapons to be stored at army barracks and oblige all the weapons to be registered. And basically keeping ammunition in different places than the actual guns and various things like that. So, yeah, you have people here. It's a conservative country. It really is a very conservative country. If you believe otherwise, you're being misled.
Very, very conservative.
Very conservative. But they have some common sense with regards to this. They still have access to whatever weapons they need. They just deal with it in a rather safe way. I want to give our listeners a chance to weigh in on all this. Our number is 631-632-9872. And, of course, before we take the phone calls, we do have to go into delay. And here's an important message by somebody who's going to take us there.
This is Dr. Bill Cheshire here to say WUSB is the radio listening choice for more incestuous families than any other radio station.
And we're in delay now. And hopefully that went smoothly. Our phone number is 631-632-9872. It was an interesting little greeting we just got there, Kyle. Yeah.
Yes, I've heard that too.
It's so true. It's true what he
it
said.
It is true.
All right. Shall we take some phone calls?
I think those people are also gun owners.
I got to say, well, the people calling in might be. I got to say, though, I have lost patience with people that that are still arguing that, no, we should have Teflon-piercing bullets and all kinds of assault weaponry.
Well,
you shouldn't. This is crazy. This is wrong. It's got nothing to do with your desire to hunt. It's got nothing to do with wanting to protect your home and your family. No one's taking these things away. No one's saying that you don't have certain rights or abilities to do things. They're saying that You have to stop at some point. You can't keep building an army in your your basement. Well, at some point, it's going to hurt people.
And this happened in the 80s. I mean, police and stuff, they had to increase the caliber and type of weapons that they had because, you know, of drug wars and all this stuff. People were getting these the industry was creating these much more powerful weapons, and it just continues. I mean, with the military and police walking around with, you know, being forced to walk around with more powerful weapons, and it just ups the ante, and it
scares the crap out of you too.
Yeah,
constantly.
It's really
terrifying when you're confronted with this, and you realize somebody with you has a weapon. You better not piss them off, or
yeah,
it's just all kinds of things that it does to you very subtly.
It really changes the mood in a room when you have a friend with a sidearm, or
yes, it sure does.
You know, somebody, you know, a couple people are in a room. They've got weapons.
If you think smoking is bad, believe me, this is worse.
Yeah, and if you're not used to guns and being around them, you know, you kind of worry if somebody you know, moves the wrong way, is that going to go off? I mean, how well do they take care of their gun? How well do they know the mechanics of it and whatnot? What kind of bullets and ammunition are they using?
Okay, we have a full switchboard. Let's take some phone calls.
All right, let's do it.
And good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hi. It's John O. How are you?
How you doing? What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I am about to partake in a trade show in Las Vegas next week called the SHOT Show. It's the world's largest shooting sports trade show. I'm in the business of selling military and tactical clothing, so I'm peripherally involved in this industry, and it's a very, very strange place. The demographics are 90% male, 99% white. But I think one of the points we're missing in all this is the financial motivation of the gun companies to keep these people having the rights to buy whatever they want to buy. One of the greatest profit centers for these gun companies has been Barack Obama, because they've used the threat of Obama being a quote-unquote liberal.
Oh, my God, yes.
And changing the gun laws to sell pistols and firearms at 2, 3, 4, and 5 times their normal price.
Absolutely. I fully agree.
It's been a huge, huge moneymaker, and that's one of the big motivations, too. They're a big part of the NRA push. Make sure they can keep selling guns and making money.
And the other thing is just the fear that they instill in people, saying things like treason and your country is being taken over by foreigners and all kinds of evil people, and Obama's not even a citizen. This kind of thing, it has effects on people who are easily swayed, and they think that it's a call to arms, practically, and they prepare for that, and occasionally they snap. Everybody snaps at some point.
And instead of people, you know, handling the economic situation and their own situations in, you know, creative, clever ways and dealing with, you know, the hand they've been dealt, they do these drastic things. And I've noticed even people around me taking these kinds of actions, getting into protecting themselves and having this mindset of having to protect yourself from other people or having to do things, you know, that or put you in dangerous situations because things are bad. You know, it's terrible fear-mongering domestically.
All right. Thanks. Thanks for your call.
You're welcome. Great job.
Thanks. And we have a bunch more people here. Let's get another one. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Daniel, I wanted to call in just because of something that Kyle said about gun enthusiasts. And I know he's not trying to paint with a very wide brush. But I just wanted to let them know that there are people out there who were reasonable people and
of course
were college educated. But
no, of course. I don't think anybody was saying anything other than that. And if you're reasonable, I think you must realize that there has to be some kind of responsibility. There has to be some kind of limitation to, you know, you can't roll around town in a tank and have your own nuclear bomb and things like that. At some point, enough is enough, right?
Yeah, I apologize if I sounded like I was making all gun owners out to be big, scary people, but I just wanted to articulate how wide and how big of an industry this is, and how little you have to, how little qualifications and that kind of thing, and how they're constantly feeling like they're threatened. The reasons, you know, the things you have to go through to get a weapon, I think, are, you know, it takes more to drive to be certified to drive a forklift sometimes. I mean, it's insane, and that speaks to the black market too. So, and I don't know, the pervasiveness gets kind of scary, and it is a passionate thing for me.
Well, I had a discussion with a friend of mine who's a doctor, And I was in the process of getting a concealed handgun license in the state of Texas. And I asked him what he thought about that. And it turns out the reason that I think so many people become an enthusiast is because you have to put so much effort into learning all of the rules and regulations that go with it, because he also said that the easiest way to become a felon is to be a concealed handgun license holder. Because if you take it out in the wrong place, if you possess it in the wrong place, if you just don't know the rules, you've committed a felony.
But
very strict
the,
about
the NRA and other enthusiasts want to really limit the places where it is inappropriate to take out your gun, where you can have it virtually in any situation. And I just think that's a step into real irresponsibility, don't you?
Well, what is your opinion on the Virginia Tech shootings? There's a movement right now pushing for students in all the states to gain the right to carry their gun on campus if they have a concealed handgun license.
That's insane. That is totally, I mean, you had a guy here who was mentally ill, who had all kinds of issues. Nobody picked up on it. He was still able to legitimately get a gun and mow down his fellow students. And the reaction to that is to just give out more guns to more students? No, that's not the right way to go. How could it be?
But he broke the law carrying it on campus. And that's what I'm saying, is that the bad guys, they
don't
care.
But the NRA is going to want to get rid of that law and say that, okay, it's legal to carry. So he wouldn't have even broken any laws until he started shooting people. I mean, what's going to happen? You get a bad grade and someone's going to snap then and start firing away, and we're going to expect other students to open fire on them to protect themselves. If it wasn't so tragic, it would be funny that we think this way.
When you say that someone could flip out and do something terrible with a gun over a grade, though, you're basically making it sound like they're just waiting to explode anyway. And I don't think that the average student, you know, or most of the students, 99% of them, are going to be that way.
Well, people do lose control. And would you rather somebody lose control with a semi-automatic machine gun or a Glock or something like that, or just with maybe their fists and a big stick or something?
Well, what I would prefer is really not related to that particular argument, but more so if you're attending, especially a community college, if you're attending classes until 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night, I prefer the safety of knowing that I have something with me that, if need be, I can defend myself.
Well, I'm not sure how exactly that's going to defend you if you get clocked from behind getting into your car, like I see all the time on TV. But interesting arguments, though, interesting points. I do want to try to get one or two more phone calls in.
All right. Thanks, Manuel. Thanks for signing my book, too.
Okay, no problem. And good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Good evening, Emmanuel. This is Bobson from Bulgaria.
Bulgaria, how you doing? You guys must be laughing your asses off at us.
What, the Arizona thing? No.
Well, not that specifically, but just the way we act sometimes and how we think and what we do. I don't know, maybe not. Maybe you guys are looking at us as role models. Who knows?
I don't know. It's not. I don't think it's funny in any way. It's just bothersome, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Well, how do you guys handle things over there in such situations?
Well, I haven't heard of any situation such as this, but that may have to do with elected politicians not really being eager to meet with people who put them into.
Well, I'll tell you, they're not going to be very eager to meet with people now in this country. In fact, I doubt we'll ever have elected politicians meeting with citizens in the street again. You know, when you have,
which isn't good,
when you have the ability, someone has the ability to just inflict so much carnage so quickly, it becomes very difficult to prevent. Now, in the old days, and I mean the 50s and 60s and 70s, someone might be able to have a gun and maybe fire off a round or two before they're subdued. And it's a horrible thing, but you couldn't take out half a dozen or a dozen people in a couple of seconds. Now everybody is a walking bomb, and it just becomes very, very difficult to have any sort of control. And the response is just going to be, well, we have to have this wall built between the people that are elected and the people who represent them. And that's just talking about politics.
The other crazy thing I heard about Arizona, they're considering legislation that makes it illegal to carry concealed weapons in school, both teachers and students, which is way beyond crazy, if you ask me.
To make it legal.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, believe me, that's one of many things that are beyond crazy. But listen, we're out of time, unfortunately. We do want to continue this discussion. It's a very interesting one, and I hope we get to meet up at one of the hacker meetings somewhere over there.
Well, there's should be camp in Germany this summer. I'm
okay, the camp in Germany. That's a great place to meet up. We'll see you there in August, the CCC camp. But please write to us with your opinions and thoughts. Maybe next week we can read some of those, take some more phone calls, hopefully. It's a tragic event. It's certainly something that none of us wanted to see happen. And just in closing, there's so much talk about days of mourning, flags at half-staff, the president going out there. But you know what? A congresswoman is no more special than anyone else who's been mowed down by some psycho with way too much firepower. We should be mourning at all of these events. Instead, we forget about them when they happen. And unless they involve somebody famous or particularly heart-wrenching stories, it just gets relegated to page 5 of the newspaper, and we move on to the next one. That can't keep happening.
No.
Someone has to change things.
Please, please, people, stop with the guns. We need access to one another without feeling like you're threatened because someone else has weapons in your presence. Then you just start thinking you need something to protect yourself. And we need access to these politicians. So just please, let's stop with the guns and get some things done with this administration and with ourselves in this economy and in the world with humanity and stuff. So.
All right. Well, we do have to stop, and Finn is coming up next, and we're running into his show, and I don't know if he has a concealed weapon. So let's get out of here before we find out. Yeah, a little levity. You need that sometimes. Kyle, thanks for stopping in. We'll hopefully see you here again.
Absolutely.
Soon. And
good night, E, and good night, everybody out there.
Yeah. OTW at 2600.com. I remember when this song used to make me feel good. I don't know. We'll see you next time.
The man in the crowd with the multicolored mirrors on his hobnail boots, lying with his eyes while his hands are busy working overtime. A soap impression of his wife, which he ate and donated to the National Trust. I'm going down, down to the bits that I left uptown. I need a fix, cause I'm going down. Mother Superior jumped the gun. 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 Mother Superior jumped the gun.
Happiness is a warm gun. Happiness is a warm gun, mama. When I hold you in my arms and I feel my finger on your trigger, I know nobody can do the one.